This is Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid Podcast.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. I am your host, Eric Rivera, and it's good to be back for another episode of the Y Nada Más podcast. It's been about a week and a half or like 2 weeks since the last time I did a podcast, because we went on an international break. A lot of controversy and things have been going on for the last 2 weeks or so, everything surrounding Vinicius. And then he gets back and then, you know, more stuff begins happening with Vinicius again as well. So it's, there's a lot to talk about. Obviously we had a game against Real Sociedad over the weekend. And I was going to do a podcast for the Real Sociedad game, but because the game was on a Saturday and then I knew that we were going to have another game today against Stuttgart for the Champions League. And although I said I was never going to do a podcast within the week, being that it's Tuesday, it's kind of not too in the middle of the week. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'll do one episode and I'll try to do this with some of the Champions League games if they're on Tuesdays and not Wednesdays or Thursdays. So I'll try to do that. It'll be like the only time I'll do it within the week during Champions League and stuff, and kind of combine two, because really I can only do like, I can't do more than two a week. I think it's just too crazy for my schedule. But with that said, we had the international break. We had Real Sociedad. And then today we had the game. This is, the evening of Tuesday, September 17th. So we just, a couple hours ago, was the game against Stuttgart for the opening of this year's Champions League, this year's new look Champions League. And I got to say, I'm not entirely against it, the Champions League being like this big league. The fact that we kind of have this round robin style of games. Or whatever the Swiss format or whatever the heck it's called. Anyway, I like it, but at the same time, I realize, these guys aren't machines, and it's kind of a crazy way to really just make these players continuously. I mean, yeah, they're getting paid millions of dollars, but I think, in the end, it's going to end up costing, teams money and titles and things like that, because players aren't going to be able to stay healthy with, so much wear and tear on their bodies. And it's going to, players aren't going to last as long if you keep on, playing at this rate with so many games. So it just seems wild. I mean, I don't know how it's going to work. I'm still kind of getting used to figuring it out. I think that basically the top eight go through. Then the next eight have to do like a playoff format. I don't know, something like that. Anyway, I'll talk more about that later. I'm not an expert on Champions League. That's not what I'm here for. What I'm trying to do is just talk about Real Madrid, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Before we get into that, quickly, if you guys are not subscribed to the YouTube channel, please do me a favor and subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're listening on via wherever you find your podcast, so whether that's Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you're finding the podcasts, if you're doing that, please, I would be super grateful if you guys went over and subscribed to the podcast on YouTube, at least just to get, just subscriptions up. You know, obviously that opens up more things the more subscriptions you get or the more followers you get. So that would help me out a lot there. So just, you know, that would be a really appreciative of that. And, you know, if you want to watch the podcast, you want to watch me talking instead of just hearing me talk, you can do that on YouTube or however you want to listen. But either way, that would be a great help to me to continue growing this thing. As I said, I'm trying to be as dedicated as possible and try to really push this more this season, because I fell off last season due to all sorts of other things going on. With that said, yeah, so, you know, thank you for listening. Thank you for continuing to listen. And yeah, so, you know, we had this game over the weekend with Real Sociedad. You know, the starting lineup was obvious. You know, we've been affected by just like a lot of other teams have been affected with injuries. You know, our biggest rivals, which are Barcelona, have been affected by injuries. You know, we've been affected by injuries, and I think, you know, other teams have been affected by injuries. Unfortunately, last season was, you know, crazy enough with losing Courtois at the beginning of the season, Militao at the beginning of the season, David Alaba at the end of Alaba at the end of the season, or towards the end of the season. He's still out. Now we have Camavinga out. We have Brahim out over the weekend. Ceballos is out. Mendy took a knock. Thankfully, now he's back. Tchouaméni took a knock. Thankfully, now he's back. Bellingham took a knock. Now he's back. So we've kind of had this ups and downs. And it's been making an already sort of shaky beginning to the La Liga season a little bit more difficult with that kind of stuff. So our starting lineup was obviously affected by these injury issues when we played Real Sociedad over the weekend. So the starting lineup, obviously, Bellingham was out, Tchouaméni was out. So Modric and Arda Güler had to start, as did Brahim over Rodrigo, even though Rodrigo wasn't injured. I'm thinking that was more of a tactical decision. But Brahim gets injured during the game, adding to our list of injuries, and it's a serious injury. You know, he's got apparently a tear in his right adductor muscle, so that's going to sideline him for 3 months. And, you know, it sucks because he's been actually playing really, really well. When he got his start, he didn't, I think it was at a versus Las Palmas, he got a start. He didn't look as good, but coming off the bench, he's always been sort of a breath of fresh air. And I think that you know, I think it's kind of, I mean, obviously, I you know, I'm not a player, so I don't know how players think. And I'm pretty sure every player wants to be in the starting lineup. I think it means that, you know, the coach trusts you. But honestly, I don't see why it's bad, or I don't think that being a super sub is always a bad thing, because I think, you know, it's a strategy in a way that, you know, when legs are getting tired, you kind of have this other option on the bench that's, you know, quick, skilled. You know, you're kind of telling this guy, you know, you're going to be my kind of like, you know, my designated hitter, as you have in baseball, or, you know, off the bench, you kind of have that how would you call it? In Spanish, you say el as bajo la manga. You have this, you know, your wild card, or you're essentially, how would you say that? There's a word in English for it. There's a phrase in English for it, but it wouldn't be your wild card. But basically, you have this other player on there that can, you know, can come in and clean up, you know? So essentially, that is what I think Brahim can do. Rodrigo has done it on occasions, you know, coming off the bench and doing that, especially last year where we weren't playing with a 4-3-3. And so he would basically come on in lieu of, I mean, well, it was Rodrigo and Rodrigo and Vinicius up top, but you could also have, let's say, Joselu would come in and mop up if he needed to. And you had this other option to kind of do that. So basically, I think it's not a bad thing that Brahim has had that sort of role. And I think he's been doing fantastic this season with that role. And now we're kind of, we're losing that for the next 3 months, which is, you know, especially considering the schedules of games that we've had is a hell of a lot of games. I didn't see how many it is exactly, but he's going to be out for quite some time, obviously. Well into after the new year at this point. So against La Real, going into the into that situation against La Real, like we definitely got lucky. You know, as they hit the post on three separate occasions, I think it was, I think his name is Sukic, hits the post twice. Becker hits the post once as well. You know, we just it's been, you know, to sum it up, because, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse or continuously talk about that, but, you know, what we've wanted to see from Madridistas have wanted to see is sort of like improvements from day to day or from game to game. And I don't think we're not, it's not that we're not seeing improvements, because even with today's game against Stuttgart, you know, I did see some light at the end of the tunnel. And I think what happens is, like, once again, you know, to reiterate that whole situation, I think Madridismo as a whole, and many Madridistas as a whole, especially in Spain, because in Spain, I don't know what it is, but they like, you know, they love the la polémica, they love the controversy, they love all this other extracurricular stuff that's happening outside of what's happening on the actual field, you know. And it's kind of, as an American, we do like drama, and obviously we think about drama, but when it's like on the field, I think we're more about just getting things done on the field. And it's not so much, you know, and like I said in my last podcast, I talked about, like, you know, you see like teams like Barcelona, they're so concerned with playing some beautiful football and whatnot. And Real Madrid has been more of this team that isn't really concerned about playing beautiful football. It's really just about getting the job done. And it's kind of just two ways of looking at sports, I think, in a way. Some people want to see it for the spectacle. Some people just want to see it for the results. You know, it's really about black and white, who wins, who loses. And I think the American mindset is really more about who wins and who loses, which is why a lot of this other extracurricular stuff that pops up, you know, with Vinicius and the whole situation with Negreira and the animosity between Barcelona and Real Madrid and the political fiascos and all that kind of stuff that happens in Spain isn't really that much of a concern for those of us that are from the English speaking world and sort of the outside looking in. Although I speak Spanish and I follow all the drama, it kind of becomes tiresome, because you're like, you guys really do hate each other for, I mean, obviously there's like some political sentiment, there's social, you know, social sentiment, there's a lot of history behind too, and bloody history in Spain behind, you know, animosity and things that come from a political standpoint. But at the end of the day, it's football, you know, and they're trying to bring in like politics and different things into football. So it's just strange to me, but probably strange for people on the outside looking in. But to go back to this game, you know, I think really what's been happening is the same thing that's been happening, which is we're still, you know, we want to call it growing pains. We're already, what, six games into the season now with the Champions League, you know, and we want to see growth. But I think it's, and I do feel like we're seeing it. But I feel like obviously injuries are hindering that growth of really finding, you know, of Ancelotti really being able to find that starting 11 that he could really, you know, feel confident with. The players are still, you know, Mbappe, Vinicius, Rodrigo, if that's going to be our attacking three, which I, you know, I'm thinking it is going to be our attacking three. They're still trying to find each other's rhythm. But, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I'm starting to see a better feeling. Like I really did against Real Sociedad. You know, I'm starting to see that Mbappe is getting a lot more fluid. He's getting, you know, he's I think he's making the space for himself now. He's taking the shots on goal. He's really trying to get those goals. Sometimes I feel, and I'll elaborate that on a little bit, because I kind of felt that today. I feel like he might be getting a little bit selfish, but I'm thinking maybe he's being selfish because he kind of wants to continue scoring goals and get more comfortable, you know, to kind of maybe get that feeling that, you know, build off that feeling that he got in you know, when he opened his scoring against Betis, and kind of get, how would I say, you know, like basically, you know, get, feel like it's not a fluke, like he's not scoring based on flukes, you know. So, you know, he scored against Real Sociedad, but it was a penalty, you know. He hasn't, you know, he scored another, which was from, at least today he scored, from open play, but it was, you know, more of a tap in. He's not doing the goals where it's, you know, him taking on a defender 1v1 and getting, you know, juking a player and getting a shot off and then scoring. So I think he's still trying to build that confidence. But I'm seeing it coming out more. He's making those plays. He's getting those dribbles, making the space for himself to take a shot on goal. Sometimes it's been at the keeper, or it's been slightly off target, or it's been, it's been blocked. But I'm seeing that it's getting there. It's getting there. And I think him and Real Madrid, him and Vinicius are starting to play a little bit better together. I just think, it's going to take some time. Today I saw, obviously, the matchup, the play with Jude Bellingham, the passes coming from Jude Bellingham, obviously that pass from Tchouaméni that opened the scoring. I think those things will continue to show up. So that's kind of what we've been looking for, and that's what we didn't find in the Real Sociedad-Real Madrid game. But I think the opportunities and the situation for those kind of things is starting to open up. Now, obviously, where I feel we're lacking, I mean, I think defense is a problem. I don't know what it is. Rudiger has been solid, maybe a little bit not as solid as last season. Militao is, coming back from a long injury, starting to work his way back in. Then he got a knock and he was out, didn't play for Brazil. And then, he didn't start this game in the Champions League. So, we started with Carvajal in that position. So, I think maybe there's still kind of some iffiness there. Hopefully we don't want to lose him. We're waiting on David Alaba to come back. So I don't know. I don't know where that's, I feel like the defense is shaky there. Then you have Mendy, who's good as a defender, but offers you very little in attack. Carvajal obviously is, aging pretty much like a fine wine, or he's in his peak right now. What is he, like 33? I think he's in the right age. He's really finding, all those kind of injury problems he had in the past. I think he's really finding his best form has been really last year. And so far this year, it seems like he's continuing on in that realm. So I think that's really, really going to bode well for us. But those are our fullbacks. When it comes to our center backs, I don't know. I feel like it's disjointed because our defense is just so disjointed at the moment. There's not that Toni Kroos factor of him being this, I don't know. He's just that calming presence in the midfield that sets the tone, he's basically like the metronome of the team. As Casemiro said many years ago, that, everyone plays to his beat. It's basically him. You kind of imagine these old movies where, I don't remember who it was, these like Chinese dragon boats where, they have people rowing the boat to the beat of a drum, right? And they would, as the drum beat goes faster, they go faster. As the drum beat slows down, it slows down, and he was kind of that guy setting that pace. Now, I think Luka Modric is along the same lines of that, but Luka Modric is also 39 years old. He's done all of that stuff before. And while he wasn't maybe the same pace setter like Kroos was, he is just as, he's able to do that. Just as well. Maybe his passing isn't to the degree that Toni Kroos was, but at the same time, he's one of those players that really kind of set the pace. But at 39 years old and him coming off the bench, he's not really going to do that as much. So it's really going to fall on the likes of really the two players that we have right now that are going to have to, pick up that role are Bellingham and Valverde. Which at this point, I think Valverde and Bellingham, how would I say? I think they're, at least Bellingham playing, going forward and attacking and making late runs into the box was kind of his thing, was much more of his thing last year. And then, obviously he does that with the English national team. He did that with Dortmund. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that as much with this team, with the way things are structured now. So he's going to have to play more of that central midfield role. Being that box-to-box midfielder, same with Valverde, whereas Valverde is better defensively and can take shots from outside the box. I think Jude is really that more creative player, the player that has a lot more vision. So I really think, you know, he can take on that role of a Toni Kroos with his passing, but even more so, more creative, because he's got that the dribbling skill set. He's creative that way. Valverde is more, I feel, just like a really just like a wrecking machine where, you know, and not in a negative way, but, you know, not to say he's sloppy or anything like that, but he just, you know, he's really good at progressing the ball and being real aggressive and moving the ball up the field and then like setting up plays from being outside of the box. He's not really one of the guys, you know, I just feel like we can't have both of our midfielders getting into the box all the time when we have, you know, our three strikers or our three players, our three left wingers all going to the left of the in the box and they're all moving left. You're just getting like this overload on the left-hand side and leaving everything open on the right-hand side. I mean, they've been better, obviously, and they've been getting better at that this, you know, as the games have moved on, but there's got to be a little bit more structure there. And that's where I feel like we're lacking that a little bit. And that's kind of where the problems are happening. And that's what we saw against Real Sociedad, you know, to go back to that, you know, we're continuing to see sort of our Vinicius and Mbappe stepping on each other's toes. You know, when Rodrigo came on, obviously it was Brahim because Brahim is more of a natural right winger, you know, so, you know, he's not going to drift inside as much, you know, and he's going to play more of that central role sometimes too, because he can play as an attacking midfielder as well. But, you know, it's just that understanding where are they stepping on each other's toes? And then I kind of felt like, you know, they with Mbappe, like I said, he's really trying to score. He's really trying to continue to showcase that he's going to be the guy that's going to bang in the goals for Real Madrid. And Vinicius is, I would say, making the sacrifice and sacrificing himself to do that more for Mbappe. But like I said, I feel that's where like Mbappe is becoming a little bit selfish, or I'm starting to see some of that selfishness where Mbappe is taking the shot. Mbappe is not making the pass. Like he's more concerned of making that dribble and scoring the goal. Hopefully, you know, that's just something that I observed in these last few games and it doesn't continue on that way. But I think that's kind of what it's going to be. You know, he's going to be the one that wants to be the designated goal scorer and rack up numbers, you know, and Vinicius is going to be there to sort of make those runs and put the ball on a platter for him, which is kind of what he's trying to do all the time. But I think a lot of times Vinicius could, you know, cut inside and do his thing and be the guy who scores the goal himself too, you know, so we can't take that away from him. And maybe that's what's kind of frustrating Vinicius as well. And that's where I feel like the issues happen, because they might be stepping on each other's toes without animosity coming into the game, which is what, you know, I think the Spanish press is trying to conjure up, is some sort of animosity, when that's really doesn't seem like it's the case at all. And then, you know, you have Neymar, you know, talking to the press and saying like it was hell playing with Mbappe. And I guess he's saying that to the Brazilian contingent at Real Madrid. And I don't know if that's just to stir up crap. So hopefully that doesn't continue. But I feel like it's more outside factors, outside, you know, naysayers and people trying to kind of hurt Madrid's closeness in the dressing room. And I think that's where we have to be careful, because there are a whole bunch of people in Spain, especially in Spain, the anti-Madridismo, the whole, you know, hate that Madrid gets because of the fact that they're one of the most dominant teams, not in only in Spain, but in world football. I think there are agendas at play where they want to see drama and they want to break up that dressing room because they see these guys are united. And that's what we can't let happen, you know? And so, you know, After going back to the Real Sociedad game and jumping from there, two clear-cut penalties, you know, I think the only one that you can kind of say was debatable was the second penalty, because you've seen a lot of those stepping on the foot and sort of after the ball has been lost or the loss of control of the ball happens, you can see some of those penalties not being called. I have seen them. So there is a legitimate gripe there, somewhat, but it's really up to the ref to call it or not. And sometimes those do get called. I mean, there is contact. So sometimes those are called, and sometimes, like, as we call them, like in Spanish, they say like riguroso, like a very rigorous penalty, a very, you know, you're kind of very, very harsh penalty. But that's up to the discretion of the ref. And, you know, he decided that there was enough contact for that one. I mean, and the first one is a clear cut pen. You know, I think it's Sergio Gomez puts up his hands to cover his face. I mean, can't blame the guy. You know, the ball's flying at your face. Out of the goalie, takes a shot on goal. He, you know, he's seeing, and it's kind of a normal, natural reaction that a person has to cover their face. Even in football, you know, it's and especially at that moment, if it's coming so quickly at your face, you kind of don't even think about it. Put your hands up to cover your face, and he put up his hands, and it's a clear cut pen. So here's where the controversy comes in. So, you know, and it's the controversy comes in not because of that goal and the two goals scored. So moving on, that's how we won the game, you know, two penalties. Vinicius scores the first one, Mbappe scores the second one. Real Madrid wins the game 2-0 at Anoeta or Real Arena in San Sebastian. Real Madrid fans go home happy. But no, the drama has to start because Vinicius decides to put his index finger up to his mouth and do the whole shush, you know, gesture. And all of a sudden in Spain, everybody loses their mind, but they lose their mind because it's Vinicius. Seriously, how many times have we seen this? And I'm not going to harp on it too much, but how many times have we seen this celebration consistently throughout years and years and years of football? I mean, Raul did it, famously did it. Luis Suarez famously did it. So many players have famously done it, you know, consistently throughout their careers. And that's where I always, you know, talk about the, you know, the racism in Spain, the fact that they have just an agenda against this guy. They want to talk about like everything that he does is wrong or provocative or something like that. Nothing is just a normal footballing moment. You know, everything has to be taken to another degree. And it's really like, you know, it bothers me because it shows like El Chiringuito, which, you know, is a show that I do watch, but they definitely have an agenda against this kid. I mean, they consistently have to bring it up. It becomes a whole thing. Then, you know, they twist his comments that were made earlier when, you know, during the international break of saying that racism, that all of Spain is racist when that's not what he said. You know, so all of this crap that they're just kind of put on him. And that's really something that I feel they're doing that because he's, you know, because he's being successful, because he's at Real Madrid, because, you know, and I will pull out the race card in this case for Vinicius, because he's a black guy, because he's a black guy that doesn't want to just shut up and play, you know, like he doesn't just want to be quiet about things, because people are saying, oh, well, why doesn't Lamal get this kind of stuff? Or why doesn't Tchouaméni get this kind of stuff? Or Camavinga get this stuff? Well, first of all, the whole Lamal thing, it doesn't happen because Lamal is from Spain. But I guarantee you, or is playing for Spain and was one of their best players in the Euro Cup, you know, so it would be ridiculous for them to hate on him. But there are sectors of Spanish society that do not like Lamine Yamal for just because of the simple fact that he's of Moroccan and Equatorial Guinean descent. There is that there. You know, there are people that dislike Nico Williams, regardless of the fact that he plays for Spain, because he is black and he is from his descent is from Ghana. It is there. And it's not, you know, it is there. But the thing is, they're quiet about it. They don't speak up about it. They're not like Vinicius, who draws a lot of attention to the fact, or, you know, really speaks up about it and points fingers and talks about Spain and the Spanish press. And he points out the Spanish Federation, and he's not shutting up about it. And he is basically doing what a lot of black Americans did during the civil rights movement, which was, you know, quote unquote, they were told by white people that they were like uppity black people, that they were basically people that talked too much, essentially. Why can't you just be the regular kind of black person that doesn't, you know, cause a ruckus, doesn't cause a stir? And that's what I feel is happening in Spain essentially they're, you know, we're still, you know, obviously United States has gone through all its growing pains with racism. And this is where I'm getting political. I'm sorry about it, but that's, you know, it's something that I do enjoy. And that's where, you know, the problems start, because Spain, I think, is just now coming, Europe is coming to terms with all of this, you know, with a lot of the issues that they have with racism, obviously, because things have been thrown at them. You know, they're in an era where there is a lot of immigration to Spain from African countries, or not Spain, to Europe, and obviously to Spain as well, because it's in Europe, but to a lot of European countries from Africa, from the Middle East, you know. And so there is this fight to conserve the white majority, or conserve, you know, their culture or whatnot. And that bleeds over into football. And here is this guy telling, you know, Spaniards that, you know, there is a problem with racism in Spain, even though he said that it wasn't all of Spain, that it was a minority in Spain that ruins it for everybody else. But, you know, the guy's been suffering it enough. You know, there's people making monkey noises. There's people telling him that he should die. There's people hanging, you know, dolls from bridges and stuff like that. I mean, if that happened here in the States, that shit would get shut down. I guarantee you. You know, people, like, you would not be able to play in a stadium, and people would get mad, arrested, and ejected from stadiums if they started chanting or making monkey noises at players. You know, we have an issue with racism in this country, but, you know, that's where I go back to, like, they at least try to do shit, you know, and they try to make, and that's where Vinicius is talking about how the Federation in Spain does little to nothing to really solve this problem. Like, getting out on a loudspeaker and telling people to stop it, you know, once, twice, three times, okay, that's a start, but you got to just start pinpointing these people and banning them from stadiums, you know? And it's not just like, oh, you know, I was drunk, you know, I can't, you know, or whoa, whatever happened to free speech, when all that's kind of bullshit. Like, it's like, dude, if you're in a private environment watching a game, why are you, like, racially abusing somebody? So anyway, those are my thoughts there. And I'm just, you know, supporting Vinicius again, which I will do, because I think, you know, the guy's good and he's just playing football. Like, what the fuck is the problem? Anyway, going back to now to talk about the Stuttgart game. I mean, another situation, cut and dry, don't want to beat a dead horse. You know, same thing, communication kind of still lacking. But I did see those flashes again. I'm starting to see, like, when we started saying at the beginning of the season that there were flashes of brilliance, there were more flashes of brilliance today that I saw. And you can just basically tell, I mean, you know, when a team doesn't play a low block, like a lot of teams do in La Liga, when a team doesn't play a low block and, you know, they're really going out to try and get the game like Stuttgart did, because got to remember that Stuttgart played last season and they came in second. They were a very, very strong, dynamic team last season. They had this guy, Guirassy. I forgot his first name. I don't know if it's Serge or I forgot his name, but his last name is Guirassy. Player. He's from Mali. Is he from Mali? I don't want to, you know, but anyway, African player, plays in the Bundesliga, played last season, was one of their star players, obviously, along with Undav, who's still with the team. Now, Guirassy left, and now he's at Borussia Dortmund, but they were very solid last season. Very, very solid last season. They got Mittelstadt, who, you know, is the plays for the German national team. Undav, Stiller, they have, you know, quite a few players there that played very, Milieu, who played in the Olympics for France. They have quite a few players there that are very, very good. So, you know, they came out guns blazing. They really wanted to play. They wanted to score. And I think a lot of German teams come out there, you know, to play this style, high press. You know, they're trying to do that. And they really, you know, Real Madrid is more of what I've noticed for the past few seasons is Real Madrid is more of a slow starting team. They don't start guns blazing a lot of times, and which is why last season we were a lot of times conceding goals first and then always had to come back and score two or three, you know. This season we've been a little bit better at that, a little bit, you know, haven't been conceding as many goals, but, you know, And it's been really on luck, because aside from Courtois playing, I mean, against Real Sociedad, it was the post that saved us three times, in addition to Courtois, of course. Today, it was all Courtois. Courtois was the man of the match. So, I mean, and when he was the man of the match, rightly so. But, you know, as they always say, when the goalkeeper, if the goalkeeper is your man of the match, then there's a problem, right? So that's kind of what happened with Stuttgart at the beginning. They couldn't capitalize on the errors and the mistakes or the chance, and then capitalize on the chances that they had. And of course, Real Madrid is always going to sort of, I always feel like Real Madrid is really good at rope doping teams. Just, you know, this whole idea, Muhammad Ali rope dope, where he makes you feel like you got him, like you got him up against the ropes, like you got him in trouble. And then little before you know it, boom, they come at you and, you know, they come at you and they score. And the thing about Real Madrid that I did see as the flash of brilliance that I wanted to talk about was the flash, when these guys have open space, the likes of Rodrigo, the likes of Mbappe, and the likes of Vinicius, when they have, you give them space to run, and those guys go get on a counterattack, they are so fast that it looks scary. And the only thing that's causing them to not bang in goals every single time they do that is because there is still this lack of chemistry or communication between all three of them up top. But that is only going to get better. And that's where I think the pundits kind of are getting it right, because they're saying, you know, just wait until these guys improve. Just wait until these guys improve. You know, if we don't see that happening by, I would say, like mid-season, obviously, then, you know, that's just when the alarm bells start ringing. But right now, you know, and if we lose a game, I think, because right now we still haven't even lost a game, right? So the alarm bells are ringing, but we still haven't even lost a game. And it's been the alarm bells ringing simply because they're not playing cohesively and they look disjointed, right? But once that team starts moving together, which hopefully it will happen, right? We're all hoping that. And that's why I think criticism right now of Real Madrid, regardless of the fact that they don't look as good as we'd want them to, and I'm not saying they look good, but that they don't look good as good as we want them to. Criticism right now, if calls of Ancelotti getting, we need to get rid of Ancelotti, we need to do this, we need to do that, all this kind of crap that just starts happening all the time, even when we get a draw, are very, 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 they're very premature, you know? At this point, it's not something that we need to be, obviously we need to worry about it, the way they're playing, but it hasn't become a problem yet, as you know, as long as we continue to win, you know, as long as we continue to win and get results, it's not going to be a problem. And I think as they get results and they become more comfortable, you know, and see the results coming, these guys are going to improve. Obviously, I think, you know, if we get Camavinga back, that's going to be a big thing. Getting Jude Bellingham back today, we already saw what he can do. And, you know, he made a beautiful pass to Mbappe, who Mbappe basically miscontrolled it. He was through on goal. If he would have controlled the ball better, that was an easy goal for Mbappe. A beautiful pass from Tchouaméni that made it to Rodrigo in the beginning of the second half. Rodrigo makes the run, you know, defenders can't catch up with him. Mbappe is making the run to the middle. Nobody's going to catch him. You know, Rodrigo passes it to Mbappe, goal, easy. That was it, you know. So already that is demonstrating not only the speed, but then the ability of having the correct guys in the midfield that we need. So, you know, having the likes of Tchouaméni, having the likes of Camavinga, you know, obviously having the likes of somebody like Ceballos, even though, you know, people weren't liking him, you know, obviously he's somebody there that can assist us in that role, because he is an out and out center midfielder, you know, so that is more of a role that suits him, and will suit us if we're going to play this 4-3-3 formation. So those flashes are there, and I saw them more today. I saw them more because, you know, if the other team wants to come out and attack and play attacking football, then we are going to bang the goals in on them, you know? So I think that is something that, as long as they continue to get results, even if we're seemingly a little bit shaky. And today, I mean, look who we came out with too. You know, Militao, you know, I guess Ancelotti's trying to conserve Militao. Maybe he took, you know, still was nursing an injury a bit, so decides to go with Carvajal as a center back and Lucas Vázquez as the right back. And Lucas Vázquez, you know, I've always had a love and hate relationship with this guy because, you know, he can play well and just have absolutely amazing games. But then most of the times his games just are not up to snuff, man. They don't work. And today they weren't. I mean, he got taken off at a halftime. That's when you know there's an issue, you know, and there was an issue right from the get-go. He just was not having a good game. And then as soon as you brought on Carvajal and moved, Carvajal back to right back and brought Militao back as center back and you made those switches, the team was already functioning. We got a goal. We got a fast goal in the second half. And then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, we fell a little apart quite a bit in the second half after the goal. We kind of sat back a little bit, which tends to happen always under Ancelotti, that we score and then we kind of like, I don't know if we're trying to, you know, conserve time, you know, to sort of, I think, you know, Real Madrid comes at you in waves, you know, so the idea is score, conserve energy, because if not, if you're going, you know, and pardon the phrasing, but, you know, balls to the wall to go basically going all out for the entire game, you're not going to last, you know. You're not going to last. And I think that's what's good with Ancelotti's style, is of conserving that energy and hitting teams in waves, because that's how they are able to sustain that level of, and, you know, and obviously with Pintus, our, you know, the fitness coach giving these guys the fitness that they have, and having guys like Valverde, and then having guys like Brahim coming off the bench and Guler coming off the bench, where they can give you fresh legs with talent and skills. Having those guys come off the bench is going to help us, you know, kind of get that second win, that second wave, and score. And that's why Real Madrid always seems to be able to close out games, you know. So we definitely kind of fell asleep after the first goal. We get scored on by Denis Undav. Then, you know, they bring in Luka Modric, they bring in Arda Güler, and the game also switches once again. We got, you know, a little bit more control in the midfield with Modric. Modric, you know, does what he does. Good cross into the box from the corner. Rudiger gets ahead on the ball, scores that. And then, you know, the story of the day, really, I would say, you know, winning was Endrick, of course. Once again, Endrick gets the ball at his feet. And, you know, it's like 30 seconds before the game is about to end. The game is in the 94th minute with 30 seconds to go. Gets a ball from I believe it was a free kick or a corner kick, from Stuttgart. The ball falls to Endrick. Endrick just bolts forward. He's got Vinicius bolting forward. He's got Mbappe bolting forward. Mbappe to his left, Vinicius to his right, the defenders kind of running back, and you were thinking he's going to lay it off to one of these two guys, right? And then he decides to just blast the ball from outside of the penalty area, outside of the box. You know, he's a couple yards outside of the box. Blast the ball and score, you know? And nobody, I mean, and that's just like I was said in my Twitter post. I mean, you know, the audacity and the balls of that kid at 18 years old, getting the ball, running straight towards the opponent's goal, with the likes of Vinicius, probably Ballon d'Or winner, you know, and another possible Ballon d'Or winner in the future in Mbappe. These two guys running next to you, one is a World Cup winner, one is a, like I said, possibly or probably the Ballon d'Or winner this year. And he decides, you know what, screw it, I'm going to shoot this ball and I'm going to score, and he scores it. And that's having personality. Now, however, I do agree with some people that probably not the best choice to make in that situation. We were up 2-1 though, 30 seconds left to go. You know, I don't blame him for taking the shot. If we were like 1-1 and needed the win, probably would have been more pissed. If he had missed the shot, kind of looks like, not kind of, would have been like bad decision, you know, but he scores a shot. He's a genius, you know. And the thing with Hendrik is really the kid has something about him, because every time he's been on the pitch, and I said this during the last podcast, anytime he's been on the pitch, he has been or has looked dangerous. He takes a crack on goal and it always looks brutal. The crack on goal he makes always looks brutal. I mean, the guy's got gigantic thighs, bro. Like, he definitely kicks really hard, right? So that ball is going at breakneck speed, right? I mean, the goalie tried to get a hand on it and it went past his hand. So he scored it because the guy just couldn't get there in time with enough force to stop it. So that was a legit banger, you know? And really, there's just something about Hendrik. And really, that's where the talks come in, is who do you sacrifice, you know? Because honestly, I would rather, because Hendrik is a more out-and-out striker, I want to see one game, and we might see it at some point, you know, when we want to, there's a rotation and we want to rest players, but I would like to see Hendrik start in some game as a striker with either Vinicius or, I mean, they're not going to bench, let's be real, they're not going to bench Mbappe. They are more likely to bench Vinicius, right? And I'm talking about not just Ancelotti, but the whole board and everybody, you know? They are more likely to bench Vinicius than bench Mbappe. Or they're more likely to put Vinicius on the right-hand side, bench Rodrigo, put Vinicius on the right, Hendrik in the middle, and give Mbappe his left-hand side. Or switch those two, whoever you want. Mbappe on the right and Vinicius on the left. But those guys plus Hendrik in the middle. I want to see that. I want to see that happen. Or put Gullit on the right and choose between Vinicius and Mbappe on the left and have Hendrik through the middle. I want to see what will happen if this kid plays 90 minutes. I want to see what will happen. Obviously, we saw him play. I think it was against AC Milan, but that was preseason. You know, with everything we've seen right now with these guys not meshing and gelling together yet, that was still very early for him to do that. He was just freshly in the team. Now this kid has already a couple games under his belt in both La Liga and in the Champions League. He scored in La Liga and the Champions League. He scored at the Bernabeu in the Liga and the Champions League. I want to see this kid get a shot. I want to see this kid get a shot and see what he can do in 90 minutes of gameplay or whatever, you know, give him 80 minutes or 75 minutes of gameplay before bringing on somebody else. But, you know, I really do want to see that happen. So yeah, those are my thoughts about that game. And then really just one of the things is I felt like, once again, like I said, when I was talking about Mbappe looking a little bit selfish to me today, you know, I think he's, like I said, maybe he's trying to continue his goal scoring run, doesn't want it to only be penalties, wants to continue kind of banging them in, wants to, you know, feel comfortable making space for himself, making those one-on-one plays, making those dribbles, opening himself up and opening up the space for himself and taking those shots on goal and scoring them. Maybe that's really what he's trying to do. He's continuing to want to build confidence. But he did look selfish for me today. And I think it's because, like I said, I feel like Rodrigo and Vinny are looking for him to make, you know, looking for him and trying to make passes to him, so that he can score. But then when Mbappe has like the opportunities to like take a shot on goal, or has the opportunity when he's on goal and there are those options where he has either Vinny or Rodrigo or somebody else to take a shot, he's not reciprocating that. And that could just be my impression of today, but I'm feeling like hopefully that doesn't become a problem in the future. That could be just what I observed today. I don't want to, you know, be El Chiringuito or one of these guys in the Spanish press causing trouble. I just saw that was my little bit of impression today, that he was being a bit selfish, but, you know, he's a goal scorer and, you know, he's proven that he's a goal scorer. He can make those decisions at times, but also, you know, hopefully play with, you know, his strikers if they're in a better position to score. You know, I had some notes here. Midfield is still unstable. No one can be the metronome or pace-setting player that was Toni Kroos. It's just not going to happen. Luka Modric it could be that player. I was saying that earlier, but he's 39. It's not going to happen for every game. It's not going to be the same as he was when he was younger. So it's really about who's going to be that creative player, which I said, earlier in the podcast. I think Bellingham is more of a creative outlet, can make those late runs into the box. But considering that we have, three guys that tend to gravitate towards the left and bunch up on the left, would you want another guy that's running into the box, kind of, making more of causing more of an issue there coming? Cause he's playing on the left-hand side pretty much. Bellingham too, as that center midfielder. So I don't know, but I think he's going to be more of the creative player. Valverde is going to be more of your more traditional box to box, take shots from outside, because he's definitely got that foot, that cannon of a leg. He can definitely take shots outside. He's definitely, I think, he's a better defender than Jude. He's a better, not to say he's a better ball progressor, I think they're both good at ball progressing the ball, but I think Valverde's got a lot more speed in progressing it forward. And then, trying to open up either to Rodrigo or to a Carvajal that's making a run up, those kind of things. Valverde is more of that type of player. And then, staying back and being more of a defensive role to assist our defensive midfielder, and then have Bellingham play more of that creative role. That's if we stay with the 4-3-3, right? And I like the 4-3-3 because I like the width that it provides essentially with the players that we have on the wings. Because, and while I liked the the diamond formation, the 4-4-2 diamond, having with guys like probably, I would like to see maybe if we were to do a 4-4-2, obviously you're going to have Vinicius and Mbappe up front. The one that would get sacrificed is Rodrigo. In my opinion, unless he's going to play a cam role, which I doubt though. And then you have Bellingham and Valverde as your midfielders. You have Camavinga or Tchouaméni as your defensive midfielder. I would go more with Camavinga, considering, form as of late. We haven't really seen what form Camavinga is in, but seeing them like that, and then maybe for me, I just feel like Arda Güler has so much more to offer this team. And, considering that Brahim is injured, Güler sitting behind the striker in Mbappe, sitting behind the two strikers, that would be just amazing to me. I feel like that would be great, but we wouldn't have the width that we have now, So that's kind of where I would like to see. We've already tried this 4-2-3-1 formation. It hasn't looked stable. I think it's because, the players aren't used to playing with it. So I think really, the diamond formation or the 4-3-3, I don't know what you guys think. That's kind of just what I was, in my head and trying to do it, and even playing on FIFA and just looking at formations and imagining how they would play, not actually playing the game, but just putting it up on the screen and structuring the different formations out with the guys we have. That's kind of what I've done always. Or do it, with these apps that you have where you can create formations. So that's I think you lose the width with the 4-4-2 diamond, but I think you have more of that midfield stability. And then you have Carvajal as your right back, which I think, he adds to the attack. But then on the left, you'd be lacking because I think you would have to have somebody like Fran Garcia, who's more of an attacking left back, but his defense kind of leaves a little bit to be desired. But if you have Mendy, who's better defensively, but he's not going to add much to the attack. So that's kind of where you lose in that system. But that's what I'm thinking. All right, guys, I think that is enough talk for me today because I've been talking a lot. But those are my thoughts. This was the podcast midweek covering two different games, covering one of my thoughts on the whole Vinny fiasco, covering my thoughts on the whole issues with, with the racism and all that, but then also continuing the issues with our team and kind of seeing them not play to the best of their ability. But like I've said before, though, I really do think it's not something to be so worried about right now. I think really we're still in a good spot. We haven't lost any games. We've continued to score and win. Are we doing it to the best of our ability to the best of what we know this team is capable of? No. But is it time for us to lose our, you know, minds and just, you know, talk? Because you see it on Twitter, like when we're losing or we're tied and we haven't been able to score, the knives come out. Everyone's talking about how Ancelotti doesn't have tactics, nah, 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 and all these like idiots that just, I swear, have some sort of, I swear, they want like Mikel Arteta on the team. They want Pep Guardiola. They want Nagelsmann. They just, you know, they want these like modern coaches to coach a team. And then, you know, when we've had success with the guy that we had, obviously I'd like to see somebody like Xabi Alonso at some point, and he will come at some point. But relax. Like, Jesus, man, every single time there's a little bit of a problem, these guys are just knives out. And this guy, once again, has not... Everyone's like, I hate when people talk about him being overrated and all this kind of stuff. It's like, do you really think he's won everything he's won for being overrated? You know, like, seriously, there's so many other coaches that have been solid, you know, pretty solid, and coach teams and just not been able to hack it. So, you know, look at even Hansi Flick, man. Hansi Flick is doing good at Barcelona, but like I said, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. They're going through a purple patch right now. I guarantee you they're not going to be able to sustain that all season. I'd rather be the guy who kind of doesn't start so good and goes the team that kind of doesn't start so well and starts moving in the right direction than, you know, just go completely play awesome like they are at the beginning of the season and then start fading as the season goes on. And I guarantee you that's what's going to happen with this team at Barcelona. Hansi Flick is a good coach, but we've seen, yeah, he did great things with Bayern Munich, but when Bayern Munich was stacked with players, you know, and they were younger, you know, you had the likes of Kimmich and Müller, all younger, Goretzka, all these guys were playing a lot younger, Davies, etc. Lewandowski, of course, you know, all these guys. Then he went to the German national team, and they were terrible. They were a complete dud. So it remains to be seen what he can do. Obviously, he's doing some amazing things, and I'm not going to doubt that Barcelona is playing really, really nice. But that, is it going to be sustainable for the entire season? That's where we have to want. That's where people need to, like, relax. And Real Madrid, you really think they're going to play like this all season? I really doubt they're going to play like this all season. God forbid some more injuries happen and we lose Mbappe, you know, Rodrigo and all these guys like that, and it's like a huge injury crisis. I definitely think we're going to continue to get better. So relax, everybody. Relax. All right. So with that said, guys, this is the end of the podcast. Thank you again for listening. This is Y Nada Más, and I am your host, Eric Rivera. Once again, you can follow us on our website, www.ynadamas.net. You can also contact me at info@ynadamas.net. If you want to write, if you want to maybe, hey, jump on the podcast and share your knowledge, I would really appreciate that. You know, if you want to jump on the mic and you aren't afraid and you have a camera, we can set something up. And besides that, you can follow me on X or Twitter at Y Nada Más Podcast. That's where I'm pretty much most active, as well as on Instagram. I'm active there as well. On Instagram, it's YNM Podcast. And on Facebook, it's at Y Nada Más Podcast. And on YouTube, and once again, please subscribe to us on YouTube. You know, give it a thumbs up, hit the notification bell. At Y Nada Más Podcast on YouTube as well there, guys. So thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And, you know, that's it. A la Madrid, let's keep it going. We have a game against Espanyol, I believe, this weekend. Shouldn't be too much of a hassle. We'll see what happens. But I think it's only going to get better. Like I said, I continue to believe in this team. I think I'm already starting to see slight improvements. It might not be the improvement at the speed that we want it, but it's happening, guys. So relax. Relax, guys. Tranquilo. Tranquilo, as Florentino would say. All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you all again soon.
This has been Y Nada Más, al Real Madrid Podcast.